It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. It's a very special episode because it's been 15 years since we did our very first This Week in Tech. Back in those days, it was called The Revenge of the Screensavers. And the original four cast members are all back together. Kevin Rose, Patrick Norton, and Robert Herron join me, plus a special visitor from the past. Next on TWiT. This Week in Tech comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 767, recorded Sunday, April 19th, 2020, 15 years later. This Week in Tech is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Now that a lot of you are working from home, it's even more important to choose a VPN you trust to protect you from online threats. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/TWiT. And by IT Pro TV. Get the most up-to-date IT training with IT Pro TV. Their video courses, virtual labs, and practice tests will give you everything you need to become a successful IT professional. Visit itpro.tv/TWiT for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. Use the code TWIT30 at checkout. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at 1/5 the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition, with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com. Enter the code TWIT. And by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter knows you have to work to stay strong, connected, and focused. To find the right people for the right jobs, go to ZipRecruiter.com/work together. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, a very special episode. It was almost exactly 15 years ago. It was 15 years ago, April 17th, that the very first show was recorded. It wasn't called TWiT at the time. It was called The Revenge of the... And we had to bleep the screensavers out. But I am so thrilled to get the original three guys who joined me on that very first less than half hour show. You heard Patrick Norton. Who could miss him? It's good to see you, Patrick.
Pleasure to be here. I'm just laughing because I'm remembering the threats from the lawyers, which always makes me giggle with joy whenever I think of lawyers threatening to sue.
We got a cease and desist from G4 Tech TV. And of course, we had to be very careful because this guy was still working there. Kevin Rose, great to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I can't believe it's been 15 years. That's insanity.
I think your life has changed more than anybody's in that 15 years, I would say.
I don't know. I've had a couple kids.
That's a
moved
lot.
Around.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick, I got to be honest. Patrick, I remember the furniture in your old apartment. You've upgraded. I'm looking at some mid-century design behind you. I see a beautiful home there. If nothing else, you've vastly improved the environment you're living in. Like, no disrespect to the house, the last house I saw you guys sharing.
Oh, no. We were living in a garage, and we had used IKEA furniture. That was Dan Heward and I IKEA. In the old Tech TV days.
Yeah, those were the good old days. Also joining us, Patrick's partner in crime on AVXL, it's my friend Robert Herron, HerronFidelity.com. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Leo. Always good to see you.
And your house is still empty except for AV equipment, and that's as it should be.
Pretty much. And yeah, and a brand new box right behind me. Oh, this is the other side. Right you, there. That thing. I've got to unbox and take a look at, and I can't even talk about it yet.
This is like the Steve Jobs photo where he's just squatting on the floor with his stereo equipment around him.
Oh, surrounded by cool stuff, no doubt. Lots of cool test equipment.
I had the misfortune of going back in preparation for this and listening to that first Revenge of the Screensavers, which, by the way, the acronym TROTS was the worst, possible acronym, although it's gotten worse. And it was frankly a painful show for me to listen to because I think I was really over anxious. I think I wanted it to succeed so badly that I was pushing too hard. And so it was not a, for me, it wasn't a great show. For some reason, I think mostly you guys, people wanted to hear it because Tech TV had disbanded the year before. Kevin was down in L.A. doing what was to become, was it the attack of the show at that point, Kevin, or?
Yeah, I believe so. They changed it pretty quickly to the attack of the show. Well, they fired, well, they got rid of Alex Albrecht, which sucked because we had a lot of fun doing that show together. And then they brought Kevin Pereira on, and then that's when the name changed.
Yeah.
Or maybe it changed before that.
I think it had changed because that's why I thought I could use the Revenge of the Screensavers. And the letter said, we're not done with that name yet. So I think that's what happened.
Yes, now, they were.
And Patrick and I were left behind in San Francisco. They didn't take us to L.A.
You know, it's hard to make a move when someone doesn't want you, doesn't talk to you, and then there was no reason to pay my own way to go to L.A. when I was pretty sure they were going to kill the show as we knew it anyway. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Not worth it. Robert, what did you do at the end of the Tech TV?
I went to G4 as well. Did. I kind of just went with the flow.
Yeah.
We ended up setting up a lab briefly down there, but otherwise I ended up working with the folks on Attack of the Show until they had another round of layoffs. And then at that point, I took a good break and then came back up to the Bay Area and worked for more Ziff Davis properties like Extreme Tech and PC Magazine.
And that's who you were writing for when we did the first show. You mentioned Extreme Tech. Patrick was also writing for Extreme Tech. And
that was awesome.
And a publication, which I don't think lasted long, called Extreme iPod.
It lasted for a while until Lawyers came out. That's, you know, but we also replaced that with DLTV when we got, you know, our hands on the first, gosh, was that 2004, 2005? 2005, yeah. I think, end of 2005, we got our hands on the first TriCaster and built the studio around the TriCaster, which was like, you know, after building the Tech TV set, it was like $7 million studio. And it's like, well, we just did it for like 20 grand.
Right. Right.
That was like, okay, this is what disruptive means when you replace $1 million worth of equipment with like $40,000 worth of equipment. That was pretty crazy.
So,
and,
people,
you know, now you can.
Yeah, well, people are doing it at home now with an A10 Mini for $300 and a couple of DSLRs sitting around, right?
Yeah.
People think that Dvorak was on the original show. He wasn't and didn't show up, I think, till episode 4, so he wasn't. This is who was on the original show. So it's fun to get you guys back again.
David Prager there? For whatever reason? No, okay.
No,
he might have been hiding. He's always somewhere. Yeah.
Well, my wife was there.
Sarah was there in the background. Well, the first time, yes, all of them were there. We did it at the 21st Amendment Brewery right after Mac World. But that wasn't, I don't consider that the first tweet because that was many months earlier. And that was like in January or February after Mac World Expo. And that was more just a test. But yes, Sarah was there. Prager was there for that one. And I think all of you as well. So, yeah. It's kind of fun that you guys are. What's interesting is shortly after that, Kevin, you left G4 and started Revision 3, right?
Well, I was there for 1 year. So I was at G4 for 1 year. We started Rev 3, and I started Dig right around the same time.
Yep.
2004.
Yep. So I'm the only one who's still standing after all. I mean, you're all standing, but this is the only thing that started in 2005 that's still going. That's saying in the podcast business, that's saying a lot since most podcasts die after a week. So the fact that we're still here 15 years later, no cupcakes.
There were no sponsors back then, right?
Oh, no.
I mean, I remember when we were doing Dignation, we had a ton of viewers, but then finally, slowly, sponsors started to come online. We had GoDaddy.
Right.
There wasn't a lot of money to be made. And then now you look at, you know, Joe Rogan, who's doing double digits and millions in a year in revenue.
It's kind of amazing.
An episode, and depending on how you count it. But yeah, it's insane.
We when we first started, I didn't want to do advertisers. I wanted to do, as Patrick has done his shows, we didn't have Patreon in those days, but it was a tip jar with PayPal and that kind of thing. But that was good for one show, but it wasn't enough to pay anybody or have any help or anything else. It was just enough for one show. So it took us a couple of 3 years, but I finally said, okay, we'll do advertisers. And yeah, at this point, we're entirely ad supported. Although, thanks to COVID-19, there's a little thinning out of the herd, if you know what I mean. I think that Rogan guy might make it, though. I think he's probably going to survive. You know who's visiting? Real quickly, a pop-in. This was an old feature of the old shows I used to watch, like The Tonight Show. People would, like Bob Hope would pop in, and he'd be across the way. He'd, you know, he'd show up. Look at this. A friend from the past, Scott Harriet Squatch, is here. Scott was never, ever on the Twitter. I don't know why I never asked you, but that's probably because you were busy making movies.
Yeah. Still doing that. Still, again, as I told you before we went on the air here, I make just enough to still live with my 87-year-old parents down in Southern California. So it's been great. It's been fun. I've been able to do primarily hiking films, gone around the world, Australia, Iceland. Just hiked in Ireland on a new route last year, and take about 3 months to hibernate, edit them together, and put them up on SquatchFilms.com.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
People may remember Scott from Internet Tonight, which was the high-end fancy show on ZDTV and Tech TV. The one with writers, producers. Yeah,
I think, always look back, I think Screenscapers, though, you guys were like, you were the highest rated show. I think we were second, but I mean, your audience brought a lot of people to our show,
a lot of geekier people, because yours was the show for real people, normal people, about look what's on the internet.
Yes.
Yeah
Which was that was so fun, man, those days.
Well, and also because you were a comic, and Michaela Pereira, who's gone on to fame and fortune, you guys were funny, so it was a funny show, and you were a comic, so that was easily the most entertaining show on the network. But it turned out what people really wanted was, you know, we're going to install Linux on this box, and it'll take us an hour. Maybe it'll be time before the show's over. That, for some reason, people liked that. I don't know.
Yeah, you were able to do both to be informative and entertaining. I mean, if I attempted anything of that technological level, you would be hearing the TV sets turning off.
But you told me you're a geek now.
Well, I'm more of a geek. I remember because I actually took pride at the time that I was really the pure end user host on the show. Everyone else knew so much more about tech than I did, and my interest wasn't in it really. But as the gig was winding down, with the Internet Tonight got canceled, and then they were cool enough to keep me on for a year, where I was on the show with you guys, and I remember Kevin Rose sitting right next to me, and I remember thinking to myself, this kid's never going to be a millionaire. And I was right on the money with that. No, hey, Kevin, there he is. It's just great. So, it's just, I always look back on those times as just being, it's a cornball word, but really magical, really fun. And what a great place to live there in the Bay Area. And then absorbing all that technological info. And then when the gig ended, I wanted to edit my own documentaries. And I remember, what was his name? Mark DeVito. Remember Mark DeVito,
the editor? Yeah, sure. Yeah.
He was the number one guy. He's going, and again, this is at that time, he would go, dude, for like $8,000, you can get Final Cut Pro, a PowerBook, and a Sony mini DV camera, and you can make your own documentaries, and it'd look good in a theater. And I'm like, that, you know, great. And that's what I did, and started making
films.
What
do you shoot on now?
I actually shoot on a Canon HF G10, which is
one of their cinema cameras.
Yeah.
Good.
I just kind of, correctly or incorrectly.
Oh, no,
just,
wait a minute. This is a camcorder. Oh, that's the same. That's the same thing we use. Yeah.
One of these,
they run about 200. Now the T20, we can't get the T10 anymore. We bought, are ready for this, Scott? When I first set up Twit, when we first set up video, which was in the brick house, we bought 35 of them.
Oh, wow, they're great cameras. Those are great.
How many are left, John? Are all not all 35? 33. We're using it right now. That's what I'm on right now. The old Vixie is. That's pretty funny. And, you know, we see, and it's so funny because we've been totally eclipsed. We had Marcus Brownlee on a couple of weeks ago, and he's shooting everything on Reds, editing on, I think he's 4 or 5 Mac Pros, the new ones, the ones that start at $6,000 with XDR displays. He even has wheels and monitor stands. That's how well he's doing. And the times have changed quite a bit.
Oh, my God.
I'm still, it's so funny that you're shooting your movies on the same camera that we're doing Twit on. That's hysterical.
Yeah. And I did, though, I just bought a Mark IV.
5D Mark IV Canon, yeah.
You know, to shoot video and get stills. Yeah. My next project, I'm hoping to show what I think is the most underrated state for beauty in America, Nevada. Nevada, you think of, you know, Vegas and Area 51, but Nevada's got a lot of beauty. It does. It really does. Like in the northern two-thirds. So I got... That's about like $3,500 that baby. But yeah. And I already did some tests. The video is sharper than the Vixia. But yeah.
Another old timer is actually in the chat room, Karsten Bondi, who produces this show. He's producing at home these days. He can't come in to the studio. That's as no one can except me. But Karsten was also one of the people who went to LA with Kevin and Robert, and stayed with them until 2005, stayed with G4 Tech TV. He says Mark DeVito, he misses Mark DeVito most of all the Tech TV folks. He had the dirtiest mouth of anyone I've ever met.
That is saying something.
Hey, Scott.
Especially given some of the people we worked with.
I know. There were some pretty foul mouths. Scott, it's really nice to see you. I ran into Scott when I came back to Facebook. And it's the only good thing that's happened to me in 2 weeks on Facebook. But it was great to see. Scott goes, "Is this you really?" And then he says, "All right, if prove it's you, what did I used to yell during the tapings of Internet Tonight?" And I had no idea. So I said, "Well, I do remember you yelling foul obscenities every time you busted a take," which is pretty much every time. And Scott didn't remember that. That's the funny thing. Karsten remembers the big list. He's even shouting it in the chat right now.
And then I actually had to ask you, name 3 executives.
Yeah,
there.
You did.
And Greg Drebin. As soon as you mentioned Drebin, yeah. I knew it was you.
I mentioned Peter Hammersley, Greg Drebin, and whoever could forget the weirdest CEO I've ever worked for, Larry Wangberg.
Yeah, wow.
Those were memories.
His head was enormous. Remember that? Good. He was a nice guy.
Drebin once told me that Larry Wangberg came up to Drebin and said, "You know, that Leo's not bad looking." I don't know why Drebin felt compelled to tell me that, but I wish he hadn't. Hey, Scott, it's really great to talk to you. Squatchfilms.com. Come back. We'll do a little more time. Spend a little more time with you. I'd love to talk to you and catch up.
Be great, man. Thanks for coming back on Facebook.
Yeah, that's it. It's after this, it's over. Little pop-in from Scott Harriet. I am so thrilled you're all here. Now, normally we talk about tech news. Kevin, are you keeping up on tech news these days?
Oh, yeah. Big time. You have
2 kids. Tell me about your 2 kids. I remember one. Where'd the other one come from?
I have no idea. It's one of those things where we were not planning it. That's for
really?
Sure.
Yeah, because I remember Daria said, I don't think she wanted one even, but I think she said one's enough.
Yeah, we were just kind of like, okay, you know, we're in our 40s. Let's
stop.
It's time to get serious. And if we're going to have a kid, we should do it now. You know.
Oh, okay,
and then, of
course,
these things take longer than expected. So, you know, when you go trying for a year and then you finally have one, you think, oh, well, there's no way we're going to get pregnant again. And just like, oh, man, it was like just a few months later. Bam.
Patrick's laughing. Sounds like he's been there. Surprise, surprise. So tell me their names.
Or Zelda and Nova is the youngest. 2 girls.
Zelda and Nova. They're both girls.
Yeah.
And Nova's how old?
Just turned 1.
Oh, wow. It's been a year.
So 1 and 2. Yeah. That's crazy. Great. Chaos.
Congratulations.
It's fun, though.
Yeah.
At the same time.
And you moved to Portland to get away from the crazy Bay Area.
Yeah, we just have more space out here. You know, we're in the woods and I can fly to the Bay Area. It's an hour and 20-minute flight. It's super simple.
Maybe that's me, but it looks like there's a skate park behind you. Is that for you skating?
No, that's behind me right there is just a garden, actually.
Oh, okay. That rail is not for skitching or
That's a kid's sandbox.
Oh, okay.
Wait till the girls get older.
Times have changed.
Yeah, exactly.
I did have a half pipe in my backyard for a while, but it wasn't for me. And Patrick has two, of course.
Yes.
And that came after we started Twit.
Yes. Yes. I'd have to sit down and put the math out, but yeah, Seamus is 12 and Tristan is 8.
Yep. There you go. Wow. So your life has changed a lot, and you also have escaped the Bay Area.
Yeah, we hit the ripcord, sold the house, and we've been exploring where in the United States we might want to live, looking at a bunch of cities and smaller western towns, and right now just kind of chilling in the San Luis Valley because the virus kind of, it's really hard to get the feel of a city when everybody's hiding inside and running around with masks looking panicked when anyone comes near them.
So it's just so obviously you started this journey before the shelter in place. This is kind of a monkey wrench in your plans.
Monkey wrench would be a gracious term, and not using any of the expletives I might use to describe it in the privacy of a conversation with my spouse. but yeah, I mean, it's been interesting, because we were looking at St. Louis when things started to get serious, and I'm like, okay, we need to kind of get out of here and figure out what, because we were staying in an RV campground, and there was this. It's hard to sort of look at an elderly couple retired with an RV and think of like Blur and Whoosh, but essentially every Canadian snowbird who was somewhere in the southern United States was bombing for the Canadian border as fast as they could. There was this point where as the virus started to pick up, one of the RV mags in Canada was like, okay, your insurance is going to be canceled in 2 weeks. They may be closing the border. And literally you just see Canadian license plates would like hit at 6, plug their power in, maybe water, and then it would be gone at like 7 o'clock the next morning. And I was like, and we were heading out towards Utah, and then we found out that Zion was at summer capacity, which is insane for March, April. It was like the beginning of March, and I was like, okay, we've been in the San Luis Valley before. We like it. It's chill.
Colorado.
You can find toilet paper. Yeah, the San Luis Valley of Colorado. So
yeah, because we were in St. Louis the same time as you were, March 2nd through 5th. It was the strangest thing. We couldn't get together because we were just in and out doing something for Worldwide Tech. But it was really funny because the last time I'd been to St. Louis was with Patrick Norton. You took me to a Steak and Shake. You introduced me to the ways of the world.
The food has really, the food game in St. Louis. It's become this destination for, I was talking to a chef there, and he was like, it's become, because there's a lot of opportunity there. It's incredibly affordable. The Union Loafer actually.
I wish I'd known this. Like, I should have talked to you. Because where we went, the haute cuisine was the toasted ravioli.
Which is were you in the hill?
A deep somewhere like no, the hill's supposed to be good. You know St. Louis too, Robert, huh?
Yeah.
Not
well, that was me much. Actually.
No, that was you. Oh, family, all right.
My whole family grew up in St. Louis.
Yeah, no. So we were told, oh no, you want Italian food? You want to go to the hill? But we didn't get to go to the hill. So I was
disappointed. Like the hill's old school Italian. So you'll either love it. You'll be like, it's not nouveau cuisine. I mean, I'm sure somebody.
No, I like old school. It's red check tablecloths, Chianti bottles with candles in it, that kind of thing.
I didn't see any Chianti bottles with candles in it, but there was a lot of red sauce joint vibe going on.
I like and that.
No disrespect to anybody in the hill, because there was also a deli there, and it was one of those places where you're like, oh, this place has been here for 80 years, and they have all of their outrageous cheese inside.
Oh,
I was like, yes!
I love that. We passed like ships in the night.
Go to the City Museum in St. Louis when it reopens.
I hear
it
that's
is the
very
most
good.
Extraordinary thing ever. Yeah, it's amazing.
We just escaped. I mean, it was foolish to fly anywhere early March. We knew it was a little risky. We survived, thank goodness. are there a lot of RVers doing the shelter in place? Is this? It sounds like it. If Bryce is,
I mean, where we are, there's not much of anybody. Period. Okay. This is a pretty empty part of Colorado. Actually, most of Colorado is empty. 85% of the population of Colorado is between Pueblo,
Denver, and then some mythical point north of Boulder and south of the Wyoming border. So most of Colorado is empty compared to that strip of the state. But there's something like a million full-time RVers in the United States. So I'm sure a lot of people are sheltering in place somewhere. Yeah. They just don't have to be really close to us right now.
It doesn't sound so bad because when you shelter in place in a fixed home, a fixed abode, you can't go anywhere, but you can just drive somewhere and have a new view out your backyard, out your window.
Well, yeah. On one hand, yes. On the other hand, most RV parks are located someplace convenient to the stuff you actually want to see. And the stuff you actually want to see at this point, like they closed Great Sand Dunes National Park, Zion's closed, Bryce is closed. All of the state parks on the east side of Utah are closed except to county residents. So it's, so the ones on the west side of the state are open, but most places are just shut down. And, nobody's seen our license plate and pulled out a pitchfork yet, but that's also
California license plates.
I do not have California license plates. I'm no longer a resident of California. And California does not like, you can't get car insurance in California without an actual physical mailing address in California. And it turns out when you leave California, the cost of automotive insurance drops precipitously.
So does everything else, apparently. Robert, did you come back to the Bay Area? Did you stay here?
Yeah. Ever since I came back up after G4, I have been living and working in the Bay Area ever since. I love it around here. Yeah. I really do. Whether or not
price.
I stay here till the end of days, who knows? Maybe I'd like to get a larger piece of land at some point and build a home. But that's a few years from
this
now.
This morning I told Lisa we should buy a farm so we could raise our own food.
And
And she said, no. She said, I would end up doing all the work. She said, I'm not doing that.
I'm envisioning you gathering the eggs in the morning and then weeding the garden. No. And I'm just not putting those two together, Leo.
Okay.
Leo, at canning season, I would pay. I would pay you to can something with me. I would laugh my ass off the entire time. I think it would be hysterical to watch you trying to can vegetables.
Hey, dude, I got a sewing machine. I'm making my own masks.
Did you actually sew that yourself?
Yes.
Well, that's awesome.
See, I got a sewing machine, and I'm making sourdough bread. I'm getting a little more domestic.
This is amazing. I've known you for 22 years. That's the only thing I've ever heard of you actually.
I'm a maker, man. I'm a maker. And you know what's great? I think masks, first of all, we're going to be wearing these for a long time, so might as well make them styling, right? This is
You've got a future on Etsy, man.
Well, this is going to be for a year or two, and by that time we'll be so used to it. I think it's the new fashion. So I'm ready. I'm going to have a little side business. Leo's mask. My mom said you should put your name on them. I said, no, I don't think so, Mom.
Get your Etsy account fired up.
Get my Etsy. Gonna be Etsying. All right. I just wanted to catch up with all three of you. It's so nice to see you. We'll do a little tech news. There is a little tech news. We could talk a little bit about the tech news, just as we had in the old days. In fact, before we go, after we do the ad, I want to talk a little bit about the tech news 15 years ago, what we were talking about.
Oh, goodness.
It was a little different. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. 15 years ago, we didn't have VPNs. If you had a VPN, I remember you had to have like a Cisco client, and it was real complicated setup. And the only reason people used VPNs was because they wanted to get on the work intranet from the outside. There was lots of security to do it. But it introduced some people to the idea that you could have an encrypted tunnel between where you are and where you want to be. And at first it was just work, but then people thought, well, we could put VPN servers other places, couldn't we? And there was and VPNs started exploding, virtual private networks. Today, you'd be nuts to go to an open Wi-Fi access point, a coffee shop or anywhere, and not have a VPN protecting you. More and more people are using VPNs at home. There are a number of reasons why you'd want to use it from home. Of course, number one, privacy, right? Your internet service provider is watching everything you do. With a VPN, they can't see. And you also have an anonymity because you emerge onto the internet on an ExpressVPN server, the same server IP address used by other ExpressVPN customers, thousands of them. So no one knows that it's you. So if you're a Netflix subscriber, for instance, you can watch Netflix UK by just pressing the button and saying, I want to go to London. Netflix Japan. There's a lot of anime. You can watch Doctor Who on Netflix UK, Netflix Canada. So if you're running out of stuff to watch, ExpressVPN is a great way to do that. ExpressVPN is also fast, and that's one of the advantages of it. ExpressVPN is so fast, you can watch HD video. So if you're running out of things to watch, ExpressVPN at home. If you're not using ExpressVPN, it's like leaving your front door unlocked every time you go out. Nothing may happen for a long time, but eventually you're gonna be paying for it. And the easiest thing to do is ExpressVPN. Windows, Mac, iOS, Android, everywhere, even on your smart TV or your streaming device, ExpressVPN is the easiest way to secure your internet. So the only question is, why haven't you started using it yet? We got a deal. Maybe this will be the thing that'll put you over the top. ExpressVPN.com/twit. You'll get 3 extra months free when you buy a 1-year package. The number one trusted VPN in the world, ExpressVPN. By the way, their privacy policy has been independently audited, and the auditors said, yep, it's exactly what they said it is. They use Trusted Server, which is a really cool technology. The VPN server only spins up when you log in, and it's sandboxed, so it can't write to the hard drive the entire time you're using it, then disappears when you log out. No trace of your presence is ever recorded. Absolute privacy. The third-party auditing team also said, yep, that's exactly what Trusted Server does, and it works. ExpressVPN.com/twit. We thank them for their support for This Week in Tech. And I thank you for supporting Twit by using that address, ExpressVPN.com/twit. So I don't see you guys as iPhone SE users somehow.
I am, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, I ordered one.
Are you excited?
Yeah, kind of.
Did you get the red?
I got the red.
The red's beautiful.
I got the red because I've got another cracked phone, and it just, you know, it's smaller, and so I'm gonna use it. Looks great. It's got a great chip in it.
It does look great. I wish they had a headphone jack. It feels a little hypocritical to offer an inexpensive, it's only $400, relatively inexpensive iPhone, but say, oh, but you have to buy $150 Bluetooth headphones to use it. That's kind
you
of
don't cool. have to.
Well, how? Oh, I guess you could use an adapter, huh?
You use an adapter. You can use, you know, I mean, the Apple adapter isn't bad. That
and
super
it doesn't
one.
Come with that, but I guess it's only $20.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, the Apple tax has to come somewhere. I'm just laughing because I basically have this phone, except I have it with a slower processor. And
it's the iPhone 8.
The camera's not as good.
You have the iPhone 8.
Yeah, I bought this like 8 months ago or something. And I'm like, of course, you know.
Yeah,
the minute they come came up out with something.
It. Well, the reason I bring it up is on the original screensavers, Kevin was talking about his Sidekick 2 phone.
No, yes. I was nice. Not. Are you serious?
Yes. That's I have so recorded funny. Evidence. You loved it. That was a great phone. Remember that? It's the keyboard.
Yeah, I mean,
out.
It would flip out. I remember Paris Hilton had one with like diamonds all over it or something. Those were such ridiculous days.
Those were ridiculous days.
Ugh. Danger hip top.
It does. Scooter X is telling me that the SE does come with the lightning connector earbuds. So I guess, all right. I'll give him a pass on that. But Kevin, you could afford any phone you want. Why would you get an SE?
Well, I mean, if I have a phone that's not really functioning right now, so it's
anything
time to upgrade.
Is better than nothing.
Yeah, and so, you know, getting the SE, it's just like the latest and it's small. I actually prefer to have something a little bit slimmer, and I don't typically use cases because I like to just like slide them in and out of my pocket.
Right.
And I think this one will just be a little bit more durable. It seems that way anyway.
I don't know.
Tempered glass screen protectors will change your life. I was going to say that. Yeah.
I hate putting anything on the screen.
Well,
I do too.
I know, but I went from breaking a screen every 3 to 6 months to having not broken one in, I don't know, an awfully long time.
Does the tempered glass break instead or nothing breaks?
tempered glass breaks. There's a company called M-Film. They sell them on Amazon. They're cheap. They're like $7 for two or something like that. The tempered glass essentially distributes the force. You'll fracture the glass, but you'll fracture the tempered glass, but it'll protect the screen below it. I mean, I'm sure if you start wailing it against a concrete wall, you can shatter the screen. But
oh, that's interesting. It doesn't feel like plastic then. It feels more like glass.
It's glass. And, it's actual tempered glass. Yeah,
that's the problem I've always had.
I hate the plastic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't want the soft plastic. It doesn't feel right. So this, once you apply it, first of all, it's easier to apply than plastic because you don't get bubbles and stuff. And once you apply it, does it feel the same as the phone did without it?
As far as I'm concerned, at this point, I got so tired. At one point, I went through like three screens in a year, 8 months or a year. And then I started using the tempered glass ones, and I just simply refused to operate a phone without a tempered glass screen protector because, you know, there was the one point where I had a screen shatter and I didn't have time to get it fixed and I couldn't find the parts for it, you know, and I'm ending up with like little pieces of glass embedded in my thumb. At this point, I can't really, you know, Gorilla Glass, whatever, versus tempered glass, my thumb can't feel the difference.
Right.
So I'm happy and my screens aren't breaking.
I'm surprised, Kevin. I thought you'd be, for some reason, I have a certain, probably incorrect vision of you, a OnePlus 8 guy. I just thought you'd get that new OnePlus.
The OnePlus?
Yeah.
No.
No? Not an Android guy at all.
Yeah. You know, I dabble in Android, and it's like every year I get super excited. I get the latest Pixel or whatever,
it's
maybe,
so disappointing,
just because I want to try it out. I just, you know, the polish, I always expect it to be the year for Android. You know, I get the device, I install my apps,
it's
and
like
then
Linux. It's the year of the desktop Linux.
Well, there'll be something really cool that comes out on iOS, like some type of new app or, you know, a new product, and then you'll get it on Android and you'll be like, damn, they didn't hire enough Android engineers. This is a crappy version of the iOS version.
Yeah.
So it's a bummer.
That's funny because I feel like the Dark Tipper would want to have like his own ROMs on his phone.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess those days are, you don't have time for that kind of stuff.
Well, I do still love to dabble. You know, it's like, I think I do have a Pixel. It's actually next to my bed, and I use it at night when my other phone is charging.
Pixel is. Yes.
Yeah. And I, you know, as part of my job, I'm looking at different, new startups and new apps and things like that. So I'm always installing. So I have to have an Android device. And so that's what I use my Pixel for.
Your apps are always iOS only, though, as I remember.
Well, I'm not talking about mine. I'm talking about ones that I'm funding as a venture capitalist, like ones that I'm trying to find to invest in.
But
so
you did that. Was it Oak, the meditation app that you did? Was that what it was called?
Yeah, so Oak was only iOS, and the same with Zero, the intermittent fasting app.
Yeah.
Zero actually has Android now. So.
Oh, okay. Have you kind of spun those off, or are you still actively involved?
Yeah, so those two are now under one umbrella, a company called Big Sky Health that a former colleague of mine at Digg, Mike Mazur, is running them full time.
Oh, yeah.
So we've since funded them at True Ventures, which is where I work. And they're doing great. Zero is for intermittent fasting has been insane.
It's a great app. I used it for a while. It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been doing over 20,000 downloads a day now.
Wow.
And I think we had 55 million fasts done so far. So it's been crazy. It's been crazy to watch that grow.
So, Robert, I'm figuring you're definitely a Pixel guy.
Yep.
I finally got one.
I love Google Fi. I think that's probably the number
Google
one
Fi
reason
is amazing.
I use a Google phone.
Yeah.
And for that alone, it's the simplicity of the billing, the international support for travel. I never have to think about it.
So
it
on the first edition of the Revenge of the Screensavers, the 15-year-old edition, you were singing the praises of Verizon. And Kevin chimes in and says, yeah, Verizon's great.
I'm still on Verizon.
Okay.
But I will say I have a Google Fi that just sits there as like my data only option.
Yep.
And then if I'm going international, like Robert said, it's just like you turn that on, you tether them to each other.
Yep.
And then you just don't even have to worry about it because, the billing and everything is horrible internationally.
I have Fi on my iPad because it works. It's it becomes T-Mobile, but it works. And I do have a Pixel 4 with Fi. So I agree with you. It's probably the best. It's the best. It's better than the big four.
And I used to do custom ROMs on phones just to have that pure Google experience or the pure Android experience. And yeah. ever since Google started doing their own phones,
yeah,
and
why bother?
That, yeah. And
does it bug you?
I
though?
Won't ever pay full price again.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Does it bug you how much that everybody now charges? It's like $1,000 is table stakes for a phone. I was
no
shocked.
Problem if it's truly worth it. If it's something on like the build level of a Samsung device, high end Samsung device, with the most epic screen and build quality, that's generally right. But on the other hand, I prefer the integrated features that the Pixel phone actually has in terms of the assistant use. And again, I'll go back to having just basic stuff built in, like a good VPN service, even though I use a third party. Google actually has one built into their Pixel phones. That's pretty damn nice, actually. And I'll just go back. Their customer service has been nothing but absolutely superb. And I'd never have to think about billing.
Yeah.
It's just like I can't really screw it up. And it's about perfect for me.
But respect. You can use that on any phone, though, right? Like you could take a Google Fi SIM and use it on, say, a Samsung phone. That would be just fine.
See, the only thing I think you miss out on would be things like doing, if you even use the feature, having your email or your voice messages read to you or something, or the text translation of them. That
it also requires Google hardware to, or the Moto, I think G6 does it, but to switch between T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular. That was the big thing that Fi did.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Google's new dialer as well with the integrated support for blocking spam calls or the assistant just answering calls for me and then give me a summary of what the hell it was. I absolutely love that.
So that's not Fi specific. That's Google specific. That's on the Pixel.
Either way. Yeah.
Here's the thing, guys. Like, I got to tell you, all this stuff is so awesome. I agree that Google does so many amazing things, especially on the AI side. Like, it's way better than anything Siri can do, right? The issue is messaging. Messaging is so broken on the Google side.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Now they've taken the word Hangout. Now it's Google Meet and Google Chat on the G Suite. They took the word Hangouts out, which makes me really worry because Hangouts is the only cross-platform messaging solution. So that's what I use on Fi.
I use Signal for everything.
Signal.
But can't make Signal your default SMS app on Android anymore. Can you?
Oh, maybe yeah.
You can.
And iOS.
Oh, you can't do it. You can't.
Oh, I didn't know that. I've been using WhatsApp.
You can
do it on
iOS? No,
mostly.
You can't.
Well, the cool thing on iOS is when you start getting your messages from iOS.
Success. I should fire it up and just double check.
No. iOS, you have to use Apple's messages. You can't use Signal.
For SMS, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can use it on Apple. Here's why I don't use Signal. I remember now. It's tied to a phone number. So for a normal person, that's fine. But if you're like Kevin and maybe me, and you have more than one phone, it's no good.
You got your burner phone, Leo?
This is like you, the one on my bedside table most of the time.
I keep my old school Google Voice account around just for having that burner number and an account and a texting system that, you know what, I'll give that out to the public.
So you can, okay, so if I use the Google Voice number, then I could put Signal on every phone and just say, oh, it's this number. This is its number. I don't think, did that work?
I have a separate number for both. I have my old.
That's it. So you have two Signal accounts. That's the problem. You have one for each phone number.
I only use Signal. You can only do it to your main number as far as I
know. That's what
I
mean. That's the problem. If Signal, look, what we just need Apple Messages with Android support. We need something that works on iOS and Android.
Totally.
That has a desktop client. It's not tied to a phone number. Frankly, that to me is a privacy issue with Signal. I don't know why they do that because
I know they've published a couple of documents recently outlining how they're aware of that very condition and how it is an issue for a lot of people to join up. And it is something I know they
want
to
attach
address
it to a number.
And they have a way they've come up with that might actually work, but they needed to get it implemented. And right now, I think they're more concerned about that new Trust Act or whatever the hell it was that was looking to circumvent end-to-end encryption.
The Earn It Act?
Oh, yeah. Whatever that's, convoluted name.
That's more, Earn It is more clever than I thought I could give Congress credit for. Because Congress and the Department of Justice and every government in the world has been trying to eliminate end-to-end encryption. Their position is, oh, no, law enforcement needs to be able to know everything you're doing, or we can't stop child pornography or terrorists or whatever the offensive flavor of the month is. But the problem is, at least in the U.S., they've done it in Russia, they've done it in Australia, they've done it in Sweden. They've done it in many countries where they just say, no, you know, you can't have end-to-end encryption. It's up to the signal or whoever. You're going to make a plain text version available to law enforcement if they ask for it. They can't do it in the U.S. because people like us will get up in arms. So they thought they were clever. Oh, we got it. I know. We'll threaten to withhold Section 230 protections, the ones that say you're not responsible for the content on your website or your blog, you know, the comments on your blog or the videos on YouTube. You're not, you can't go to jail or be sued for those because you're just a carrier. But they say if that protection, you have to earn it by, yeah, you got to earn it by following, quote, best practices in terms of encryption, or in, just in terms of offering, you know, best practices, but what they're really talking about is encryption. And who is the final arbiter of best practices? Sure, they've created a committee, but it's all deferential to the Attorney General of the United States of America, one William Barr, who thinks encryption is the worst thing that ever happened. So it's
well, so does Dianne Feinstein.
And Dianne Feinstein, who is one of the sponsors of the Internet Act. So Dick Blumenthal, another sponsor, said, it's not about encryption. We just don't want child pornography. We want companies to be responsible. They have to earn their Section 230 protection. But it is about encryption. The funny thing is Dick Blumenthal is going on and on about how you got to use encryption, and then he's got sponsoring this stupid act. It's very offensive.
Yeah, it's Orwellian. It's so they don't realize that this is a whack-a-mole game. Encryption is never going away, right? So you shut it down on messaging, and guess what? You just take a file, a text file, encrypt it, put it on a Dropbox, and share it with someone else.
Yeah,
and you go back and forth, and you just keep doing that. It's like it's so ridiculous. It's just people are going to find ways around this.
Have you ever used? I love Magic Wormhole. Do you know about that? The problem with using Dropbox is Dropbox has a copy. Of course, it's encrypted, but it's there, and there, you know, maybe that sets up a red flag or something. Magic Wormhole is point to point. So if I want to send Patrick a secret plan to dominate the world, I would use Magic Wormhole to encrypt it, and it would give me, you know, an English passphrase, you know, nasal walnut, glow nasal walnut, and then I would call Patrick and say glow nasal walnut. And hang up, and then Patrick would fire up his magic wormhole, type in glow nasal walnut, and it would do a peer-to-peer connection. And so no third part, well, I guess the phone company would know about it.
Yeah, BitTorrent had something like that too recently, right? Yeah. There was something they did that was encrypted like that.
Well, there was Resilio.
The problem with BitTorrent,
put that off to Resilio.
And Resilio is they never it's not open source. They never revealed the protocol. Mm. So it seems like a good idea. Yeah, you'd have a unique identifier. Anyway, what were we talking about? Google Fi. Oh yeah.
Google Fi.
And the iPhone. So I hope this doesn't depress you, Kevin, but John Prosser, who, by the way, I don't know who this guy is, but he's been leaking on Twitter, and he had every detail of the iPhone SE, including the name, before anybody else did. He even said the release date would be Wednesday. Just tweeted a couple of days ago. Should have some iPhone SE Plus news for you soon.
That's really odd.
There's another one coming.
Is it the larger version? Like a larger screen?
Just the larger version?
But people are unhappy about how large this one is. It's 4.7
inches.
Oh,
my God. The naming conventions of the iPhones are so confusing.
Well, anyway. Yeah, I think I'm going to get one. I think
you're going to get the XR or the XR Plus?
I love the XR. I love the XR. Wasn't that a nice phone?
Yeah, but what's the difference between a SE Plus and an XR?
I don't know. Yeah, you're confusing me. I'm confused. I think Mint Mobile's sending. Are they going to still send me an iPhone SE? Mint Mobile, yeah.
I just want like iPhone 14, small, medium, large.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That'd be so great.
That'd be so good.
And then we all understand SML. Everything that's going on.
Yeah. Big screen, little screen, tiny screen. How about the Magic Keyboard? That Apple also said that's going to be available a little early. They said May. It's now going to be available this week, the 24th.
I've got that coming.
Of course you do.
Well, I'm telling you, the iPad with the mouse combo is really fantastic.
I agree.
I've been using it like that, and it is so great to finally see some innovation on the mouse side, like how the mouse turns into the object it's touching.
I love that.
It's really cool. Yeah.
That's something that's brilliant, because then you know what you're doing. If it turns right into the button, you know that's a button. I'm going to click if I click that button. I think I agree with you, and I've felt for a long time the 12.9-inch iPad is amazing hardware that somehow the software just isn't living up to the promise. This is a laptop. So they're finally putting a laptop keyboard. It's the same keyboard as on their MacBook Air and the 16-inch MacBook Pro. They're putting it on a hinge, so it's kind of a little bit more. It's even got a charging plug on the side. It turns it into a laptop.
Yeah.
$350.
This is just so much money for what it is.
It costs as much as an iPhone SE. But yeah, no, I really think I was excited when they announced this, because it felt to me like Apple finally said, yes, we are going to turn the iPad into your next laptop, and this is how we're going to do it.
I think it's more bridging the code they need to start pulling all of the – basically eliminating the Intel processors from the laptop lineup over the next couple of years.
Do you think they're going to do that? After they announced this, I thought, oh, they don't need to, because the laptops are the trucks, as Steve Jobs famously said. And the desktops are the trucks. They're for the people who are doing coding, video editing, launching rocket ships. The iPad's the computer everybody else will want. Normal people will want. And then we don't have to, we can keep Intel, because they really need the horsepower, frankly. So they can keep Intel in the trucks, and then ARM for everything else. You think they're going to put ARM on the trucks?
I think they're going to try to. They'll probably start with the Airs and work their way up from there. And it's going to be interesting to see, because also it's been kind of crazy watching the new processors from AMD here on the desktop, or excuse me, on the laptop, and the performance on those for what you're paying is spectacular. Because you know, where you're just like, oh, this is like the desktop story, but in a laptop. And all it's because we were looking at Sebastian Peake from PC Per, and I were talking about this earlier this year, and we were like really excited, but we were waiting to see what the battery life looked like. And then the battery life, wow, battery life's not looking bad. So, you know, they're just kicking asses at AMD right now. And Intel has to be, you know, Intel's looking at like a year, 2 years of reorganizing and reorganizing and trying to get back on their pace. I mean, they've been off on their process technology for a while. They just didn't care about power users particularly, because, hey, where else are they going to go? We'll give them another 5% this year, 10% that year. And now all of a sudden, AMD is just pushing them hard. And I think it's, you know, we've been looking at processors, and everybody's coming up with custom processors for the phones. And I think it's, you know, like Qualcomm's going to be competing not just with Apple, but with, you know, it seems like everybody else on the planet at this point in terms of ARM designs. I feel like they're starting to get enough power out of ARM where they're going to sort of take over the low-end Intel processors and be able to do things that kind of customize it to run their code better. We'll see in a couple of years.
You know, speaking of AMD, did you see that they are now powering the next generation PS5s and the next generation Xbox both as well?
Yeah.
So both of them. Both. Yeah, that's huge.
It's the GPU and the CPU in that, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Are they doing both sides? That's crazy.
Yeah. And they're finally going to catch up on ray tracing, which NVIDIA's owned for the past year.
I think it was those console processors that gave them the money to sit down and kind of, you know, blow up the architecture and start over from scratch on the desktop side.
Here's something we would have been shocked to be talking about 15 years ago. 5-nanometer processes. AMD's doing it. ARM's doing it. Who would have thought? In fact, I seem to remember that you have quantum tunneling problems at 7-nanometers. I don't know how they're doing 5-nanometers.
You know what's crazy is AMD isn't even doing it. They're not TSMC. The ones actually manufacturing. Yeah, exactly.
The Taiwan.
Well, that's what would be crazy is the idea that Intel would lose the lead in process technology and TSMC would bypass them. I mean, that's the thing that's kind of like, whoa, what happened, Intel?
What did happen at Intel? What the hell happened at Intel? They couldn't even get to 10-nanometers.
I should go check. They're right around the corner.
Are they? Oh, yeah, that's right. They're in Oregon. That's right. Yeah.
I'll go knock on the. Actually,
ask
they closed.
Would you?
It closed.
It closed.
Yeah.
That really is an interesting thing to me, and I feel like, do you think we are now at the literal limits for Moore's Law? I mean, 5 nanometers.
It'll go to light next.
Yeah.
Photonic processing will be the next one avenue of making everything go even faster than it is today, with no end in sight for that, especially for specific compute projects, too. I mean, Intel's already experimenting with that. Hopefully, it'd be nice to see an actual project or a product. But for right now, if I'm building a new box for myself as a workstation, AMD, I'm not looking at Intel. Somebody, and I have not said that in probably like 15 years. I can't even recall the last time I thought this.
It was exactly. Remember at the Screensavers, we were rooting for AMD because they were sticking it to Intel. And they were keeping the overall processor prices down. Mm-hmm. And they were really improving efficiency. And it made Intel step up. And for a while, AMD was on the rocks. And now they're back again. It's a fun battle.
It's been a battle for a long time. Yeah. I bought an AMD 486 DX280, which was a 40-core base with a 2 multiplier, because it was so much cheaper than the Intels, you know? And I was like, I was really happy with the purchase. I saved $75 or $100 on the processor.
Were you playing Halo on that? Is that what your Halo machine?
No, this was a long time ago. I don't even know if Halo was around.
Oh, it wasn't Halo. What was that game you guys were playing?
Counter-Strike.
No.
No, I was booting Windows 3.11 for work groups is what I was doing.
Yeah, but remember we had the LAN party and the Screensavers? It was Bungie's, but it was the predecessor to Halo. Marathon. You were playing Marathon on it.
I think I was playing back then like Wolf 3D.
Oh, or Unreal Tournament. Yeah. Somebody said Unreal Tournament, maybe. I remember we were playing, and Quake 3, right? We were playing that, right?
Team Arena.
Quake was amazing.
Team Arena, yeah. And you guys would like blow me up all the time.
It's always a fun feeling.
What was that thing Prager did? He was like, you had a circle of rocket guns and you were making like a people bounce in the air or something.
Oh, you could turn on the mods, right? So you'd like zero gravity mods and all those.
Wild. Yeah. The LAN party was a lot of fun. But I felt like Karsten later told me at pre-Tech TV, back when we were doing the site, that because they were playing, that's when they were playing Marathon, maybe, because it was all on Macs, that they were told to gang up on me.
So
management said that Leo's a dick. Go get him. Karsten, right? Am I kidding? Am I making that up? Maybe Karsten's making that up. I find that very hostile. We are reliving the golden years with our good golden friends, Kevin Rose, who is now at True Ventures. You're are you Angel or
just one of the partners?
A round.
There.
What do you do?
We do seed in Series A, so very, very early. Yeah.
That's cool. You like that, right? Because you get to see these guys when they're first starting up and
help them
along the way.
It's my favorite part of a business. It's like, you know, one or two people just getting in together, the initial idea. Sometimes they have mock-ups, sometimes they have prototypes, and it's so much fun to see, you know, what you think is going to be something massive, but it's going to take a few years. So it's bleeding edge stuff, which is I've always enjoyed.
So as an entrepreneur, you created Dig, and I remember you were on the cover of Business Week as the $60 million man, which you quickly told us was not anywhere near the truth.
That was just a made up cover by Business Week.
But you exited that after I convinced you to create Dig 4.
That's right. That was all your fault.
It was my fault. In fact, I have a T-shirt that says Dig 4 was my idea.
Amazing. If you want to take that blame, I will take
the blame, because I remember telling you, you know, the only thing missing on Dig is you should let the users. I can't remember what it was, but it was something that really was a bad idea.
Yeah, it was not your fault. You had nothing to do with it.
Okay. You didn't listen to me then either. All right. Okay. but it's kind of unfortunate because after Dig was very successful, this guy named Alexis Ohanian and Steve Huffman came along and said, oh, we should do something like that. We'll call it Reddit. And Dig passed away because everybody gamed Dig and, man, you had massive gaming issues, which was really unfortunate.
Massive, yeah.
Spammers just hit it hard. and somehow Reddit avoided that. And they got all the glory when you really deserved it because it was your idea and they just made a clone, frankly.
It's like, you know, these things are all – every idea practically that I see launched is some type of modification or iteration on somebody else's thinking. So I don't really look – I actually don't look back on the Reddit team as being – I think it's – I have Reddit on my phone. I use it.
Me too.
Some of the subreddits are fantastic.
Oh, I love it. It's my only social network, really. And I've interviewed Steve and Alexis. Alexis is now like a movie star because he married Serena Williams. So, but it's, you know, they were just one of us and they, you know, Steve wrote it in Lisp for crying out loud. The first version of Reddit, which
that's
Alexis,
amazing.
Alexis is going, oh, we thought this was a terrible idea. but so then after Dig, what did you do? You was that when you started Milk, or you were doing Revision 3? You were doing Dignation.
Yeah, Revision 3, Dignation. I started dabbling in angel investing back then. It was a really good time.
You found a little company called. I remember you told me about it. I don't know what it happened to Twitter. I think it was.
Yeah, Twitter was very lucky in that when you're in the Bay Area in 2004 and we're the beginning of Web 2.0. You know, you get to know all these other founders. So that's that was very fortunate that I got to invest in some of those companies.
Early stage Twitter money. And do you still do wristwatches? Because the last time I saw you, I think we were at the French Laundry with a bunch of other people for a wristwatch company. I can't remember with.
Yeah, Hodinkee. So Hodinkee is still on the board there.
Yeah.
They're based out of New York. And so I haven't seen them in a while, but I will get out there at some point.
Do you still do watches, or are you moved on to another fetish?
I'm an Apple Watch. I'm a quantified self. Like,
you're an Apple Watch guy. After all those fancy, expensive Swiss watches.
Well, so here's the deal. I can appreciate the dying art and craftsmanship that goes into some of that stuff.
Emphasis
it's amazing.
On dying.
Harsh,
yeah, I mean, you go to Japan and you meet some of these really small independent watchmakers. They spend, you know, 6 months making a single watch, and it's an amazing thing to witness. So,
But it is a very specialized, limited thing. And actually the Apple Watch has pretty much put Swiss watchmakers out of business, I think.
It happened a little before.
Did it? They were dying Apple already? Watch. Yeah.
That would be the quartz movement, I think, was kind of the kick in the teeth on that one.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, when you could get a $50 watch that was more accurate than that watch that took a year to build.
Yeah, at a certain price point.
I was going to say there's probably more interest now for mechanical watches today than there was even like 10 or 15 years ago, in terms of whether or not I doubt they're any more affordable, but especially for a good one, but
some of them are hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're really
works of art.
They're works of art. Yeah. Which I can admire from a distance. Let's take a little break. We'll talk more with Kevin Rose, Patrick Norton, Robert Herron. We'll catch up with all three of them in just a little bit. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV, our 50th anniversary. IT Pro TV is not quite as old, but they were based on the same notion. In fact, I remember that Tim and Don, the founders, they were IT trainers. They came to a little panel we did at NAB some years ago. We talked about what we had done with Twit. They said, boy, be interesting to do something like that around IT training. And IT Pro TV was born. They have absolutely surpassed us. Now in Gainesville, they have, I think, 5 or 6 live studios. They're beautiful. They are doing hundreds of hours a week of IT training, 4,000 hours on demand. And one of the reasons they keep those studios running all the time is because they want to keep them up to date. That's part of their core values. And it's important. If you're thinking about an IT training, you got to train for the latest exams. You got to use the latest software. There's new certs all the time. There's interfaces are redesigned. You can't use the old stuff. So IT Pro TV makes a point of having the latest, greatest IT training. And I got to tell you, it's engaging. It's entertaining. It's fun. Binge-worthy learning for IT professionals. Whether you're wanting to get a job in IT or keep that job going. Look at that set. That is a that looks like the old screensaver set. It's gorgeous.
That's a pretty cool set.
Isn't it? They have one that has an elephant invader. an elevator. I'm so mad. Then they also did something really smart. They have a central control station in the middle, and then the studios are all around it. So it's very flexible. In fact, they also do just sidelight right now with a lot of companies trying to take conferences and training off, offline or online, I should say, instead of in real space. They also are helping people do that too. So you can contact them if you're interested in that. If you want to cancel or you had to cancel your upcoming conference, they can actually do virtual conferences either in their studio or use their expertise to come to you and have you set it up. So IT Pro TV is great to keep in mind for that too. 4,000 hours of IT training. They're the official video training partner for CompTIA. Those CompTIA certs are the base certs for anybody who wants to get into IT, whether it's A+ or Network Plus or Security Plus certs. They have 12, in fact, CompTIA on-demand courses.
I'm an A+ certified technician.
And you're proud of it, right? Aren't you proud of that? Yeah.
Got that back in 1995.
That was for desktop support, right? In fact, that's how you started at Tech TV. You were our support guy, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Wow.
You still call me up. I'm still defragging your hard drive.
Yeah, I said, hey, Kevin, I can't figure it out. Help me. itpro.tv/twit. Be like Kevin Rose. Get your A+ certificate. It's a little harder than it was in 1995, but IT Pro TV is there to help you. Right now, if you go to itpro.tv/twit and you use the offer code TWIT30, you'll get 30% off, and not just for the first month or year, but for as long as you stay active. That's an incredible savings. I want you to take advantage of that. You're going to love it. Even if you don't do this professionally, if you're a geek, if you're geek enough to watch what we're doing, you're geek enough for IT Pro TV. itpro.tv/twit. Offer code TWIT30. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. These are great guys doing some really high-end, wonderful content that's helping people get fantastic jobs. And this is a good time maybe to get a job in IT.
Yeah, that A+ helped me land a couple jobs, actually.
Sure.
One of the Nevada test sites and at Tech TV.
If you know this stuff, but you can't prove you know it, right? The cert is the way you get in the door. Then you have experience and you can say, hey, look, I got the experience, and you can keep going from there. But often that first entry-level job, without a cert, they don't know.
I still remember some of my questions from the test.
Give us one. Yeah, see if we can answer it.
Okay. Let's see if any of you can get this. This will be a good one. What IRQ was COMPORT 2 on by default?
Oh!
I know the answer to this in my head.
Wait a minute. Was it odd even or even odd? I'm trying to remember. I want to say IRQ 13, but COMPORT... No, it's lower than that. I'm going to say IRQ...
Don't look at the chat room.
One. No, I'm not. I'm going to say one. Is it one? No.
Two.
That's easy. IRQ 2 is port.
I was so happy when those modems started doing auto IRQ.
I used to know all that stuff. Remember IRQ conflicts?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. When they started doing auto IRQ.
Because they shared. Two ports shared the same IRQ, interrupt request.
And then you go take a little jumper out.
Oh, my
and then
God.
Move it over.
Such a nightmare. It was the worst. That chat room knew that. I think the chat room knew. Did they? Oh, no. They said IRQ 5. That's the sound card. Yeah, get it right, guys. Come on. Talk about worthless knowledge today, right? We don't have serial ports anymore. Or is
I have a couple of really old computers that it's good to at least know where to find that info for when you, if you want to try to get them working again. So
there's a huge movement for playing vintage video. And when I say vintage, yes, I mean stuff from the 80s, 90s, you know, the early aughts now, where people are assembling. Yeah.
Lazy Gamer Review on YouTube, LGR. Look that up. It's the guy's been doing it a while. Awesome channel. There's a lot of channels out there like that, but LGR on YouTube is just one of those kind of channels where it's just pretty much dedicated to the older stuff.
I downloaded Leisure Suit Larry, the first one, I was like, oh my God, what is this? it was like eye-opening.
So horny, man. We had, what was his name? Al? I can't remember his last name. We had him on the show.
Oh, yeah. What was his name? Yeah, Al something.
The creator of Leisure Suit Larry.
I want to say Al Laffer. That's not the right name.
I feel like I don't want to say he's dead, but I feel
Larry.
Like,
no, Oh, Larry Laffer was Leisure Suit Larry's last name.
Yeah, he was called Larry Laffer. It was, oh. Al Lowe. Al Lowe, he's 73 years old. And wow. I think he's still doing it. I feel like I read that he just released an update to this.
Leisure Suit Larry, Land of the Lounge Lizards was originally came out in 1987.
Holy
the remake
cow.
In 91.
And
Kickstarter had a 2013 remake.
Yeah, and in 2018, Leisure Suit Larry, Wet Dreams Don't Dry. That give you some idea of the kind of humor. Al was a great guy, though. I loved Al Lowe. He was a hoot and a half. You kind of miss that. I miss the old days, and I miss the people because it was a different. Now it's very corporate, and you deal, Kevin, with all the startup guys. But I liked the old days when software came in a Ziploc bag with a Xerox instruction, and the people who wrote it were people more like us.
Yeah, back the BBS days is what I miss the
BBS
most.
Days. Exactly.
Sorry, I'm like having bad flashbacks to getting FidoNet to run.
Yeah, so
FidoNet was impossible.
Were we
to set
all
up.
FidoNet sysops?
Yes.
I shared a house with a FidoNet sysop, so I didn't have to become a FidoNet sysop. But it was just, part of me is like, I have nostalgia, but so much of what you can do now is so much easier.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm torn,
I had in 1984 or 85 set up one of the first Mac BBSs. It was a FidoNet. It was in San Francisco. Tom Jennings was in San Francisco, the creator of FidoNet. So I used to talk to him from time to time. And yeah, it was very different now. It's much easier, but it's some sort of easier, Patrick. It's sort of harder too, though, don't you think?
I don't know.
It's different. There's a lot more.
Yeah.
There's a lot more. In those days, if you knew the interrupts, you only had one or two hard drive models, right?
I, at this point, it's amazing like how many things are just completely unfixable by an end user.
Exactly.
Where if it doesn't work, it's probably impossible for you to get it fixed, without accessing some level 2, level 3 tech. It's kind of amazing. But it's also, I don't know, I'm like laughing because I think like, operating system updates used to be a big deal. And now we have Windows as a service, which on some days I adore. And on other days when like, I remember, my system rebooting right before recording a podcast and discovering that it had wiped out the drivers for my camera, my Focusrite, and the keyboard.
But here's a story that just came out that I think illustrates how difficult it is for end users. And this is right up your alley, Patrick. It turns out that a lot of the big NAS drives being sold by Western Digital, Seagate, and others are using a technique called SMR, shingled media recording, shingled magnetic recording. And there is a real flaw in SMR. It's slow. It's really slow. It gives you higher densities because it's like a roof shingle. It's layering the data different data on the same track, and it really can slow you down. It's not the kind of most hard drives are CMR, conventional magnetic recording, but the problem is there's no way of knowing,
right,
if this NAS drive you bought is an SMR drive. And as a result, unsuitable for use on a NAS.
Well, I mean, the simplest way is just, you buy the purples or the reds.
No, the Western Digital reds are shingled. At least some of them. That's infuriating.
I've started using Seagate drives of late for all of my hard drive needs. I had ran into a couple issues with some Western Digital drives, and I use them in NAS boxes for surveillance systems that are constantly writing. Not a lot of read performance, really. I don't really need that side of it, but it is writing like 99.9% of the time to a bunch of drives. And most people, especially once you start getting into systems that are at least 8 drives or more, then vibrations become an issue, and that's where the case and the drives themselves have to be rated properly. We were just talking about the good old days with operating systems.
Yeah.
I think one of the big transitions was just this multitasking environment we're in now. It really just kind of – it used to be back in the day we ran one app at a time at full speed. If you want to close that app and do something else, so be it. But that seems to have opened the means for a lot of people just to get themselves in trouble. Like you accidentally click the wrong email link while doing something else, and it'll wipe out a system or make your life –
well, there certainly are very bad actors out there. Do you think Kevin's the dark tipper? He always hated
it. Yeah.
I like to rub it in, though.
I know you do.
Do you think it's different now that hacking today is different? I mean, you did a lot of hacking stuff, all of it benign, all of it white hat. Do you think the bad guys have gotten worse?
The thing is, I am certainly a little bit more paranoid than I used to be about everything. I just assume if I'm putting anything online, it's going to get out there. And I treat my own home security quite differently than I have in the past. But, you know, I'm not familiar with the latest and greatest tools that are going on that,
you couldn't
that are
do
being
a dark
used in the black
tipper.
Hat word.
You couldn't do a dark tipper show these days.
Not these days, no.
you're all grown up.
That's right.
I couldn't either, for that matter. Although for that, we have people like Father Robert, and we bring in other people who go to DEF CON and Black Hat. I don't know. I don't think there'll be a DEF CON or Black Hat.
The priests, man. The priests are good at those.
Priests
those
are
dark,
scary good. They've
scary
been,
good at
they've been into
hacking.
The dark arts for centuries. They know.
Oh, so quick update to the SMR. Toshiba Seagate are also – Toshiba and Seagate
Everybody's
are also –
doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, shipping SMR drives.
It's cheaper because they can do more data with fewer platters. And at first, if you read the Ars Technica article, at first Western Digital said, oh, no, we're not doing that. Oh, okay, we did it on one drive, which never made it to the consumer channel. Okay, we are doing it, but it's like it was very embarrassing for Western Digital. It makes me really think.
I think they're going to get stomped on this one pull back from it. I don't think it's something that can really survive if they start wiping out NAS performance.
Good.
I could be wrong. Good. It's frustrating, right? Because so many of the really, you know, there's not a whole lot of sites doing really serious drive reviews or SSD reviews.
Not anymore.
And,
not anymore.
You know, yeah.
It's, Alan Malventano is the last, the late great. Now he's at Intel.
I look at Backblaze a bit. Don't they do the storage pods for their own?
They're good because they're a backup company, and of course they use a lot of drives. In fact, I think they may have been the ones that revealed this SMR scandal.
They publish their aggregated data every year for their failures.
That's
and what,
very useful.
Yeah, what they buy and how many hours, and it's pretty. Yeah. It's as detailed as you want to get into. So. Yeah.
Google's done that too in the past. Yeah, you want to look at somebody who's got thousands and thousands of drives, tens of thousands.
Well, it gives you an idea of who's reliable, but it also confirmed in some cases, like, hey, if you spend more money on a helium-based drive, then you're going to actually get a better result. But you know, they're also part of the thing of doing at Backblaze is being like, we can use consumer-grade hardware and spread things out enough that it
becomes redundancy.
Significant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I did buy one of the. So I don't think 15 years ago. We would have thought, oh, yeah, I just bought a 16 terabyte helium-filled drive for $400. We'd have been like, what? 16? No, you mean gigabytes. No, I mean terabytes. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Mind-boggling. I don't think anybody anticipated the densities that would go up or that eventually solid state would get almost as inexpensive as spinning media.
Yeah, like 1 terabyte SSDs for 10 cents a gigabyte. It's like, yes!
Yeah, they finally broke that 10 cents barrier.
And also pushing read-write speeds to 4 gigabytes per second.
That's amazing, isn't it?
6?
Is that mind-boggling?
That is awesome!
Oh, my God!
And you can put it right on the motherboard. So
you
don't even need drives.
Well, that's one thing I think Apple's done very well with that they put the T2 chip in there, which gives you a whole bunch of features, including security, of course. It's their fingerprint reader on the MacBooks or the more modern iMacs and Mac Pros have them. But it's also the disk controller. So they can put bare NAND chips on the motherboard, and that's their flat. That's their, you can't upgrade it, but that's their SSD. pretty remarkable. They're very, very fast. NVMe drives. Jeez, I bought a 2 terabyte NVMe drive to put in my XPS 13 for $200.
Nice.
Mind boggling, you know? And do you guys all use SSDs now? Have you any reason to use a spinning drive for anything?
If you just want cheap storage and you just
My NAS has a spinning drive. I'm not going to use an SSD.
Oh, in my workstation, my main drive is an SSD. And then I also have an equivalent sized, like a Western Digital Black drive or something that I've had for a long time. The typical setup.
Somebody asked
me. Yeah, I have a Fusion. I use the Fusion drive, which is the hybrid setup.
Oh, Kevin, stop.
Why? What's wrong with that?
Oh, Kevin.
There's nothing wrong with that. Oh, don't let him shame you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Adequate piece of hardware.
That's a horrible, terrible.
On my iMac,
it's the only thing. It's a brand name for Apple came up with for this hybrid solution. Intel did it too. They're terrible. That's why not.
Well, it gives you the speed of the SSD to boot with.
No, it doesn't.
Right?
Not even close. It gives you a little more speed. It has a very small SSD and a big spinning drive, and then it tries to figure out, oh, he's going to use this again. I'll put it on the SSD.
Are you editing video on that system? Are you working with like multi-terabyte files?
I'm just doing photo
editing. He's fine, Leo. I mean, you can be like, you know, it could be faster if you just spend more money and then move everything over.
Does Apple still sell Fusion drives?
I mean, I didn't get this Mac that long ago. Let me see what year it is. This is a 2019 iMac.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not a big fan of the Fusion. I think it's needlessly complex, especially nowadays. It made sense 5 years ago when SSDs were so expensive. But it's the default drive in the iMac.
Shame on you, Apple. when you're on the iMac, though, or when you're in any Apple configuration page, it's like, oh, little processor, $200. Yeah. Like, okay, I'll take that.
It's easy to do, isn't it?
And then it's like RAM, like another $200. Like, oh gosh, maybe I probably should. And then by the time you get to the bottom, I'm like, I'll just take the Fusion drive. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm going to save a little money. I did buy the new MacBook Air, and it's all right. Whoops, I just closed it. It's all right. It's got a real keyboard, finally. But decent.
But why
keyboard.
Did you get that if you have the new iPad with the mouse coming?
Kevin, this is my job.
That's what I tell Daria.
It's my job.
I'll have like a new piece of like hardware come in, and she's like, "Did you really need another like laptop?" I'm like, "I have to review these things.
Honey.
I have to have one of this.
It's just part of what I do."
I hope she's not
it's
watching.
It's literally the only reason I got in this business. I was a DJ and I bought a computer in 1978, and I said, Jesus, software is real expensive. Oh my God, a floppy drive costs $1,000. Oh my. So I said, how can I afford this? I'll write for magazines and they'll send me free stuff. It's literally why I got into this.
I want to know what's in Robert's box. Speaking of stuff to review, he's got that like
what is
secret
in that
white box?
Box. What is in that white box?
It's audio equipment, and you definitely
he said he couldn't
want to
tell
listen
us.
To it. No, I can't. Not yet.
It's embargoed, or is it?
Will drop it's not out yet.
Ceiling terrible.
Can you tell us what brand?
No, I don't. I'll tell you, but I not now.
All right.
I can probably say the brand, but I'm just going to keep my mouth
don't
shut
do
because
don't do
I
it.
Sent back the prototype, and that's the final shipping one. So
I want to take a break, and then I want to talk about audio equipment because we got Robert here, we got Patrick here, we got Kevin here, and I'm curious what you guys use and what you recommend. I think it might be this is something nobody talks about anymore. Right? Audio.
Yeah. Speak for yourself.
Well, I know you guys do on AVXL. That's why I want to ask. Because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like people don't care anymore.
Dolby Atmos. On Netflix.
That one I don't get. Why do you have to have a sound coming from up there? Why do you have to
have
bouncing off
sit
the ceiling.
If you sit through an Atmos, first of all, you don't want to do bounce. You want to do, you know what? Do your commercial.
All right.
I'm going to run to the pod. And then we'll
everybody go to the bathroom.
Audio.
Go to the bathroom. This is your chance. Smoke them if you got them. And I'm going to do a commercial and just sit here. Too bad I don't have a catheter. And we'll be back. We'll talk audio. It is so fun. You see, this is how Twit got started. because I love these guys, and it's so much fun to talk about tech with other people who have equal passion for the subject. And frankly, we get into the nitty-gritty much more than I get to these days. Robert Herron is here from AV Excel and Herron Fidelity. That's his business. Patrick Norton was here, but we're getting a beautiful view of the wood paneling in his RV. He's also on AV Excel and former host of This Week in Computer Hardware. We'll talk about that when we come back because we had to let that one go. Kevin Rose is also here. Kevin, are you doing a podcast still?
I do my Kevin Rose show
whenever you feel like it.
Yeah, like every few weeks. I don't have any sponsors. It's nothing crazy. It's just something fun I do.
The chat room is asking that you go out and grind on that rail while we're taking a break.
Yeah.
Just take your skateboard out.
Get the skateboard out.
Yeah. Do a little grinding. Our show today brought to you by Wasabi. Hot cloud storage. Hot. Yeah, you'd think of hot like with the wasabi you get with your sushi. No, no, no. This is sort of like that. It's hot cloud storage. Do you know everybody is moving to the cloud now? I'll give you, I was talking to my friend David Friend, who's the founder of Wasabi. Really great guy. Love this guy. And we were talking about how more and more people have realized that they can't do on-prem what they want to do. They have to go into the cloud. He talked about a building downtown in Boston, put security cameras up, as one does all over the place. Those security cameras are streaming about a megabyte every minute. It's actually a megabit. So, yeah, it's even more than that. It's a lot of data, and there's a lot of cameras. And all of a sudden, they realize if we keep buying hard drives, it's going to cost us a mint. Put it in the cloud. In most cases, Wasabi is less expensive and more secure than your on-premises storage. If you need storage, we all do, you need Wasabi. If you're a managed service provider, you're going to love Wasabi because it costs you less. That means you can charge less and still earn more money. Wasabi uses a patented technology, only they have it, of writing to disk. They write in data in blocks, not sectors, and it saves them so much that they're 80% cheaper than Amazon's S3. That means they're significantly less expensive even than on-prem storage. In fact, typically you could store data in the cloud with Wasabi for less than the annual cost just of the maintenance fees on the on-prem storage. I remember how much our SAN used to cost. I get much more storage for much, much less. And Wasabi's disruptive price performance model makes buying cloud storage just kind of the natural no-brainer. There are two ways to pay. You could pay as you go, like you would normally. And by the way, Wasabi is about $5.99 per terabyte per month. It's really affordable. Or you could pay one time with what they call reserved capacity storage. This is another way Wasabi's really innovating. Wasabi's reserved capacity storage makes buying cloud storage a natural addition to your on-prem storage. If you're thinking about buying more hardware, like that building in Boston, compare the price against 5 years of reserved capacity storage. And what it'll do is you'll say, and I know sometimes for accounting to convince the boss, look, here's the price of this, here's the price of that. It's easier to understand. It's easier. You can purchase cloud storage in 1, 3, or 5 year increments. You'll get even greater discounts for term and capacity. Security is better than on-premises storage. 11 nines of durability, and they do active integrity checking. And since they're in multiple premier tier 4 data centers that are highly secure and fully redundant, you lose one bit on a file, they get another copy from another data center, you're golden. And all Wasabi data storage is secure by default. It's always encrypted at rest. Even if you don't specify encryption, it's just the way it works. Encrypted at rest. And they have very powerful access control mechanisms, bucket policies, ACLs. You can even say, this data is immutable. It cannot be erased. It cannot be altered. It cannot be encrypted by ransomware. That data is protected from hackers, from malware. It's protected from you. I just think Wasabi does it right. FINRA compliant, HIPAA compliant, CJIS compliant. Affordable. It's 80% cheaper. It's 6 times faster than S3. They don't charge for API access. And by the way, they use the S3 API, so you already know how to use it, and you already have tools that use it. They don't charge for egress. You know, if you look at S3 and all the tiers and all the buckets and all the egress and everything, it's so complicated. Wasabi is very straightforward. It's very straightforward. I don't know why anybody would do anything else. Calculate the savings for yourself. You can try it right now. Free storage for a month. If you go to wasabi.com, click the link, and use the offer code TWIT. This is a good way to really bang on it. Take a look at this reserve capacity storage. It's something new they just introduced. It is really disrupting the industry. I know you probably say, what? I never heard of them. I know Google. I know Microsoft. I know Amazon. You better know Wasabi. You better. It's a better way. Join the movement. Migrate to the cloud with confidence. Wasabi, WASABI.com. And don't forget the offer code TWIT. These guys are great. I know them well. I'm really proud to work with them. And I'm very happy what they're offering is so superior. Wasabi.com. It's kind of, you know, it's an enterprise play, but I also know a lot of individuals are using this for all sorts of interesting things. It's just a brilliant way to go. Wasabi. All right. Everybody's back, refreshed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, baby. Tell me. That was a dramatization. It was very nice. Well done. Kevin, do you listen to music anymore? You're a dad.
I do.
Young kids. You do.
Yeah. I'm a big audiophile, more on the kind of vintage vinyl side. But
really? So yeah. You have a turntable and all that?
I do, yeah.
I guess you're in Portland. You have to buy records, right? They don't even allow CDs in the town limits, I think.
No, CDs are allowed. Tapes are allowed, but yeah. And a Laserdisc as well.
Laserdisc, baby.
Oh. Yeah.
You don't still have a Laserdisc. I'd be jealous if you did. God, I miss my Laserdiscs. I had, you know, such great, you know, stuff on my Laserdisc.
They look so cool, too. And when you like, pulled one out, yeah, they're just
giant
beautiful.
Giant CDs, they're rainbow.
I think they're about $1 each on eBay if you really want the experience.
Yeah, but who's got the player, right? You got to get
exactly.
A player. And then the only bad thing about Laserdisc is you have to get up and turn it over halfway through the movie. Although the fancy people had the ones that would turn themselves over, I guess. Yeah. So what do you listen to? What's your stereo setup, Kevin?
My stereo setup is a friend of mine's dad manufactures these little handmade tube amp turntable all-in-ones. Yeah, It's called Symbol Modern Record Console. Check it out. It's beautiful.
How's Symbol spelled?
S-Y-M-B-O-L.
Okay.
Symbol Modern Record Console. And it's a fantastic little setup. And you don't have to worry about anything. It's just all in one. And then it also
fetish level audio gear.
No, but it's beautiful. Oh,
it is beautiful,
my
but
God.
That's $20,000 right there.
Oh, my God.
That's artwork.
So everything, and look at the tubes. Can you tell the difference? They say tubes are warmer.
Yeah, they introduce second order harmonic that's pleasing to the ear. And if you enjoy it, man, I don't even want to.
So it's not. It's actually inaccurate because it's adding something.
It's a lot of people enjoy it. Is it accurate? No.
Interesting.
Does it have to be accurate?
No.
Listen to what you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's.
Builds these by hand. You know. These are beautiful. It even includes the speakers.
Yeah, it has everything all one, and you can even AirPlay to it as well. It has a little built-in digital component to tie into that.
That's awesome.
Oh,
do you get decent stereo separation with the speakers that close together?
Yeah, I mean it's actually pretty wide, but you know it's in a pretty small space, and it's just like I threw on. Records that are already scratchy and it adds a little warmth to it. It's just a beautiful, fun thing to have.
Are you buying new records? You didn't keep your old record collection.
No, you can buy, just good quality, old vintage stock, like new stock.
Do you
vintage.
Go out and get the heavy vinyl? What are they, the 30 ounces or whatever they call it?
185 gram audiophile grade vinyl.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
The really crazy stuff is like the 45 RPM LPs. So it'll turn like a Coltrane album into like six or eight sides or something.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. I think Kevin's got the right thing. Like, you know, buy something cool, throw it on there, enjoy the scratches, and just roll with it.
You know what? This is so much better than buying a Mac Pro. I might just get it. No, I can't.
You won't be sorry.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It is a work of art. Oh my God. And he builds these by hand one by one, probably, right?
That's right. Yeah. It took me a couple months to get mine.
Well, if I ever make it big, that would be a nice thing to have.
They have some other ones as well. They have a smaller one. They have a, let's see, which one is it called?
The one can
tabletop.
Dream. One can dream.
But there's, you can also get amazing sounding gear that costs, you know, a fraction of what that console will cost. Yeah. You could also buy used, you could buy vintage consoles and have somebody go through it for, you know, it's one of my neighbors back where I used to live in Alameda bought vintage, like, you know, old 50s, 60s consoles, the big massive units. And he would, you know, either use those for parts for other consoles or, you know, restore them, you know, fix them up and either resell them or keep them.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's kind of fascinating to watch because the entire audio industry is kind of moving in two directions simultaneously.
Well, one of the things that's kept us alive is home theater and surround sound. Now that we're all home watching a lot more TV, people don't build stereo systems anymore, but they might be building a home theater system that doubles as a stereo system, right?
It's moving. It's funny because like the audiophile people get really, in many cases, get really pissy about surround sound because it's like, well, it's, you're optimizing for the reproduction of this, you know, surround experience, but not the two-channel audio experience. The vinyl people hate anybody who's using anything digital, or for that matter, in many cases, it's funny to watch because when you, yeah, especially if you go into the forums, there's so much infighting. It's kind of hysterical to watch, you know, the speaker people trash talking the headphone people talking about why their experience is better. And there's moments where I'm just like, there's so much hate. Just shut up and listen to what you like.
Yeah, that's it. You got a great point, Patrick. It's funny. Like, I don't even have any type of surround sound or any type of speaker system hooked up to my TV. I just like the default built-in speakers of the TV is what I listen to.
Oh, that's the fusion drive of television.
It is. But like, I don't care. I would much rather listen to something amazing on vinyl and have that be my thing.
Oh, you really are into music. I will say, wow.
Do you watch movies at all, or do you watch any like high quality television series at all?
I do watch high quality. I'm into Ozark right now, and then I watch Ozark's basketball. Amazing. But we only watch like 2 hours of TV a week, my wife and I. We don't really watch a lot of TV. God. We used to, when basketball was on. We just watched it on an iPad though.
It's amazing how good the soundtracks are on television series now. And just even putting a simple set of stereo speakers or a sound bar will just vastly increase the immersion. It's amazing how much a really good audio experience. And it doesn't have to be an expensive surround sound system or a cheap surround sound system. Just having a decent pair of stereo speakers that cover most of the audio range makes a huge difference in what's going on. You start realizing how clever some of the audio work is in some of the television series or movies these days.
All right. That's a good point.
Robert, I don't want to spend too much money. I want to get some nice speakers. What do you like?
I think Patrick's suggestion for a sound bar is the way to go. And the one I'm using right now is the Sonos Beam. It's their smaller sound bar compared to like the Play Bar. And my favorite thing about Sonos, other than pretty decent audio quality, is their freaking app. And with that, I have every audio CD I've ever owned ripped to a NAS box, and that can deal with tens of thousands of tracks in a lossless format and let me stream that however I want around the house. And I absolutely adore that. And what I'm hoping for coming up is an upgrade for my TV has built-in Dolby Atmos support. And for TV speakers, it sounds okay, but I really, really want to get a set of audio speakers that can at least simulate it, maybe with a soundbar system, or eventually I'll get the full-blown home theater with four speakers in the ceiling in addition to the seven speakers surround.
ELAC's a great speaker company right now. They're a German speaker company. And a couple of years ago, Andrew Johnson, and who had been doing stuff for Pioneer, started doing some designs. And he's just – flat out trying to give you as much acoustic performance for the least amount of money possible. I mean, Elac Debut 2.0 is a fantastic speaker, and you don't have to get super audiophile-y about it. He basically redesigned when we did the second debut is because they did this very high performing speaker for not much money. You need a decent amp to push it. But then the entire industry started to kind of like, oh, you people will buy decent speakers. And then they did the Debut 2.0. And I think it's the reference series. That's the new one. I haven't heard that one yet. I hear amazing things about that. But the original Debut 2.0, they're on sale right now for like 30% off on Amazon. You know, it's like $230 for a pair of really solid speakers. And they sound astonishingly good for the money.
You know, it's funny that you say that because Scott Wilkinson's been telling me to get these for more than a year, and I keep thinking about it. But ELAC.com.
Oh, yeah, they're a German company. Andrew Johns, he's
legendary. You know, he's legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with good reason. But it's amazing because there are a lot of companies right now, Mr. Speakers, or actually it's Dan Clark Audio now, is one of my favorite headphone companies. There's some amazing audio quality that doesn't cost a lot of money. Because you see a lot of stuff, especially if you're going to like a Can Jam or some of the audio shows, you'll walk into a room. And I remember walking into a room and somebody's like, this just sounds astonishing. And I'm like, well, you know, this is $600,000 worth of speakers and amps. If it doesn't sound astonishing, something's horrendously wrong. But it's kind of amazing when you look at somebody like RSL doing a speed woofer, which is this 10-inch woofer that has phenomenal performance. I think I think Brent Butterworth picked it as the as Wirecutter's pick. Or, you know, what Elac's doing with their speakers. Emotiva is out trying to...
I have Emotivas at home. Yeah, those are nice.
Yeah.
I like those.
There's some astonishingly good gear for not that much money.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to watch that happen. So...
Retcon in our chat room has Revels. Retcon, did George Lucas leave those to you in his will? That's nice.
I remember, Revels are nice. Not
oh, they're very nice.
Expensive.
Really? I thought they were hugely... years ago, Scott Wilkinson had a friend who was... they were scoring the Sony Uncharted. I think it was Uncharted 2 or 3. And they used this symphony orchestra soundstage at Lucas down here in the Marin
Skywalker.
County, Skywalker Ranch. It's one of the last few symphonic sound stages where you can get 100 musicians. He invited me down. It was amazing. But I was so I'm on the floor listening in the room with these guys, and there's nothing better than that. If you're lucky enough to stand in the middle of a symphony, that's pretty good. But then I went into the control room where they have these beautiful Revel speakers, and it was pretty indistinguishable. It sounded really, really good for a quick A/B test. I was impressed, but I'm sure those were the high-end diamond cone, whatever it is.
Well, but it's also, it's kind of hysterical because do you remember, Robert, when we were up in the tower at CES and we walked into this room and one of the guys from the super pretentious audio mags was in there and he sounded like the comic book guy and he's talking about his personal Nagra recorder and how he had recorded this chanteuse, and he's name dropping. And I think Rob looks over at me really funny because I'm basically standing on my chair and then I'm dropping down low and then I'm back on the chair again. And there were these beautiful speakers. They were just visually stunning, like 7 feet tall. And they were talking about their diamond tweeter technology, and they sounded like ass. I'm standing up. Maybe my head's not at the right level to hear the highs.
They were $800,000 speakers.
$800,000.
Did they really sound that bad, or is it just Patrick?
$400,000.
Well, we went like two
That's
doors
bizarre.
Down, but it's so funny you mentioned Revel because we went like I was sitting there because I looked at Rob and I was like, oh, those like $100,000 speakers, and we found out like 2 days later there are $400,000 speakers, and like two doors down was Revel, and they had which is still incredibly expensive, $20,000 speakers, but they were astonishing. The imaging, the sound, the low end, everything was just it was everything you want out of your $20,000 speakers, except I want to pay $500 or $1,000. And we were laughing because it was like you had these amazing looking, ridiculously like house money for a pair of speakers, and they sounded atrocious. And that's one of the frustrating things about, you know, when you start getting into the audiophile stuff is you start seeing these companies that are selling like $1,000 cables or $300 USB cables, or my personal favorite, the audiophile grade, a $900 switch, which is essentially a modified 35, you know, it's essentially like a $35 switch that they modify and resell for like $700 or $900. There's no measurable difference. If you blind AB it, there's no difference. And it's a little frustrating to see some of the stuff that's out there. And then you hear something that's amazing and it's like, oh. So I don't know. It's curious, the whole thing. But we were talking before everyone, you went to commercial and the rest of us ran to the bathroom. It's good that they have that catheter for you that lets you go for the entire time. But
I like headphones. You taught me about headphones back with the Grados, right? Way back when.
Yeah. It's so amazing, all the headphones that are out these days.
Yeah. And then I bought, and this was Scott Wilkinson's recommendation. He reviewed it recently, this little DAC. It's called a Hip DAC from iFi. And it's a battery backed up, you know, so it's got its own power. And you take the USB out of, you know, your MacBook, which has, you know, an okay DAC. Or I'm using it with an XPS 13. And so you just get the digital audio from your device. You can even use it with your iPhone if you want, with the right cable. And this really makes a big difference. And then you can put some decent headphones in. It sounds good. And this way I'm a little more portable, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot
similar with my workstation.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I'd love to have some good speakers with these. It might be pretty good.
It's funny, like AudioQuest, who makes expensive speaker cables, but they do a whole series. This is their high-end one that I got in for review, the Dragonfly.
And that's a DAC in that thing?
This is the DAC. Wow. This is the actual physical DAC.
That's awesome.
And these things are ridiculously good. I would start with the black, unless you have like some planar magnetic headphones that require a lot of power. This thing's complete overkill for the vast majority, but the AudioQuest Dragonfly back is amazing for the money.
I am listening on Hi-Fi Man, electro planar, whatever.
You should look at Dan Clark Audio and the Aeon 2 that they just came out with. I'm actually just getting a set of those in to take a look at. But Dan Clark, if you want to, their closed headphones are astonishing.
If you're my age, I should probably just wear hearing aids and not worry about it. Oh, these are pretty.
It's funny because when he came out with those, like the original Aeons, you know, I was talking to him and I'm like, you're delivering something that's like as good as your primary product, but for half the price. And part of his thing is he's just out there to just kind of blow up the industry and deliver
heart, because there's so many kids listening on these little white iPod, you know, headphones or iPhone headphones.
Well,
I don't think they're hearing the music. I really don't.
But that also used to be something I remember at the Revision 3 offices is I kind of became like, you know, the
headphone man.
People be like, I hear you can make my music sound better. And I'd like hand them a set of headphones and they disappear and they come back and they'd be like, you know, and even like a set of Sony MDR 7506s, which Robert's probably wearing right now or has near him, like for $80.
Good. Yeah, those are good.
They're on my head right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paired with an external or a USB DAC that I love.
Yeah.
From the company called Shit, and they're full of.
Oh, S-C-H-I-T-T.
I-I-T.
They're very I-I-T. Good.
Yeah. I-I-T.
I-I-T.
Yeah. But I just wanted something that gave me a physical knob, like old school analog knob for volume control. That's really all I wanted. Yeah. But it happens to perform perfectly. So,
and if you're looking for a headphone amplifier, take a look at a company called JDS Labs. I know these guys. They're friends. But their Atom amplifier for $99. When you go to someplace like Audio Science Review, it's outperforming. You know, this is a $99 inexpensive product they did because they do their Elements was just like my old headphone amplifier DAC was kind of trash. They had just come out with the Element. I fell in love with it. And then the primary engineer spent a couple of years kind of experimenting and figuring out how to lay out the boards. And he's created this, you know, I was laughing because I had this like, you know, $1,300 set of like this very, you know, serious audio company speakers. And it was picking up all the noise from my 34-inch curved monitor. And it was really frustrating because if there was a pause something or if there was a quiet passage, I would hear noise from the monitor. And then this $99 headphone amplifier, you could basically like shove it up against the alternator of a car and it picked up nothing. I mean, you know, it was next to this monitor and it was picked up nothing. And it's amazing, like companies like these guys like JDS Labs and again, like, you know, Mr. Speakers, they're delivering astonishing audio quality for not that much money. And pretty amazing to look at.
Is this the stuff you guys talk about on AVXL?
It is. Oh. We talk a lot about, you know, screens and projectors and content and what's going on in the industry. And
good.
Robert's kind of amazing. If you ever want to know about televisions, Robert,
I know
his stuff.
He has calibrated several of my TVs. Thank you, Robert, very much.
You are very welcome.
Yeah, without his calibration, I wouldn't know if the field is red or blue. Our show today brought to you by a longtime sponsor. We really appreciate. It's a message from ZipRecruiter. Right now, they say we cannot be overwhelmed. We have to work to keep our loved ones safe, protect our communities. We have to work to stay strong, to stay connected, to stay focused. We have to work to inspire, to innovate, to build new solutions. But for all of this to work, we have to work together. At ZipRecruiter, we connect employers and people every day. But today is different. We're partnering with first responders, government officials, the medical community, the innovators in the manufacturing, transportation, and food distribution industries. We want to make sure we're finding the right people for the right jobs right now. Let's work together. ZipRecruiter.com/work together. ZipRecruiter.com/work together. I thank you, ZipRecruiter, for your support through all of the good times and now through the harder times. We really have a lot of respect for ZipRecruiter. We use it. We love it. And we're kind of glad that they're around. ZipRecruiter.com/work together. Thank you, ZipRecruiter. What do people who love sports do these days? It's all old sports events.
iRacing, baby. Virtual.
Are you into iRacing?
It is the coolest freaking thing. Their F1 was trying to do it with the F1 2019 software, and the drivers themselves said that this is way too arcadey. It's kind of ass. So this other company that does a league of dedicated racing software, accurately modeled tracks, and the gear to actually, if you wanted, set up the full surround screen with pedals and steering wheels. So NASCAR,
how close
series,
is it to the and I know drivers are so. And so when you're watching now racing on TV, you are always watching a simulation. And
exactly,
these drivers who are driving are the actual drivers. How close is it to their? I mean, does the skill set translate?
Everything except for what one driver described as the butt dyno, like that seat of the feeling in your pants when you're in a corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of the track modeling and the aerodynamic forces and the setups on the cars, it is as accurate as anything else in the world. Nothing else I've seen comes as close.
If somebody's a good driver on the track, he'll be good at iRacing?
Yes, it would take, you need some practice because it is a virtual environment, but I am shocked. They always seem to have at least one ringer who's good at the virtual racing, but these tracks are so accurately modeled using the latest information year to year. They actually rescan them with laser systems.
Wow.
And there's a cool video right now on YouTube where they do a split screen with the Circuit of the Americas track in Texas. And the top half is the iRacing running, I think it was a Ford GT, and on the bottom is a real Ford GT.
Wow.
And if you squint a little bit, you can't see the difference. And it is exposed some of these drivers to a more social aspect, and they're for the good and the bad. Some
in a
them,
way, that's right, because they're sitting next to the other driver, right? They're not,
right,
they're not in a car. They're actually the guy's right there. It's like the LAN parties on the screensavers.
A couple drivers have had to be reminded that people can hear what they're actually saying.
Yeah. One driver lost his job.
Then the other driver who raged quit. And he's just like, oh, I can't do this. And then within 5 minutes, the sponsors tweeted out. It's like, well, we don't support losers. We support racers.
Oh, wow.
I was like, holy crap.
Wow.
That was the best.
Kevin, do you ever get to play any video games at all anymore? You used to be pretty good at that stuff.
Sadly, no. I downloaded that Crossy game. I haven't played it yet, though.
Oh, Animal Crossing.
Yes.
I've been dying to play that.
I downloaded it, so I officially have it. I just have to find the time now. So that is next on my list.
Apparently, that's quite a time sink. My son has the Switch, and he won't. I said, can I just borrow it for a little bit to play Animal Crossing, which he bought. And he said, no, it takes all day. I'll never see it again. You don't get to play Animal Crossing. But I bought the Nintendo Switch. He said, that doesn't matter. It's mine now, baby.
Apparently, you can't find the Switch anywhere because of this game.
I would buy another one just to play the game, and you can't. You can't get it. Sigh. All right, let's take a little break. We do have in case you were wondering, here we are sitting here 15 years after our very first show, the very first show that could be reasonably called Twit. We've done since then 767 episodes, a lot of them. And the show's changed a little bit. I went back and listened to episode one, and I don't know. I mean, the sound quality, everything. I think we've improved a little bit. And just to give you an idea, because I know you guys, you know, you're not watching our shows. We made a little video of what happened this week alone on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
Yeah. Rate my Skype room. Have you seen this one?
Bit of a mess, but adding 2 points for color coordinating bow tie and globe.
Hands-on photography.
Lightroom Classic, Lightroom Mobile. We're going to talk about that this week on Hands-on Photography.
Hands-on iOS.
I want to show you how to take control of your I should probably turn that on. Okay, bye. Sorry about that. I'm going to show you how to use Do Not Disturb on your device.
Mac Break Weekly.
I did finally get the MacBook Air 2020, by the way.
If you don't like iPads, you want an actual Mac, but you want it to be super portable. It fixes everything that was wrong about the 2018 version and makes it like that really fabulous 2011 version that most of us love.
All about Android.
Some of you might remember that the Android distribution chart, has been removed from the web.
And those news articles always got a lot of views, but, you know, it's not really something that the public really needs to know.
It's like how I wore an NSYNC shirt every day of the week in eighth grade. And at one point, people just said, we get it. You like NSYNC. So I just stopped wearing an NSYNC shirt every day of the week.
Yeah. I mean, the Android distribution chart is exactly like that, actually.
Twit.
Oh, my God. Jellybean.
Working at home with you.
All Android roads point back to NSYNC in the world of Flo.
Not just Android roads.
All roads.
We love you, Flo. We're so happy you're back.
Actually, we had a great time, and it's not in the promo, but for Friday night, we inaugurated, which I think is going to be a regular weekly event, our game night. We were playing Jackbox, which is kind of the successor to You Don't Know Jack. It was Aunt Micah, Jason, and I. We had a lot of fun. Is that, John, do you know, is that available on the Twit YouTube feed or in the Twit specials somewhere? I hope it is. But we're going to do more of those. We do them 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Fridays. Is it there? Yeah, it is. Yeah. So you can watch the fun we had playing really terrible games. That's me in the plastic bag on the lower left. I actually decided to wear a plastic bag.
Crunch.
Wow. It was terrible. But a lot of fun. So we're still playing. It's kind of like LAN party. We're still doing it. We're still playing the games. All right, we're going to have some final conversations with my very precious guests this week. It's so nice to have Kevin and Patrick and Robert back on 15 years later. Normally, we'd have cupcakes. We'd have balloons. We decided to forego all of that during the current crisis. And we've donated as a result. We've taken the money we'd spent on that and a little bit more. We've donated to local COVID charities. So no balloons, no cupcakes. Yeah. Yeah, you can have them on your own, in your own time. We haven't talked to... This has been a COVID-free show. We're going to keep it that way. But everybody's, you know, sheltering in place wherever you are in Colorado and the Bay Area and Oregon. Kevin, has it been difficult for you or is it... It sounds like you guys have a kind of cozy lifestyle anyway these days?
I mean, the only thing that's challenging is, you know, two kids, two and one, that we just have to handle all the time around the clock.
Right,
and
right,
there's interruptions with work and you're doing Zoom calls and the 2-year-old wants to hang out with dad. And like, it's, you know, it's just a little different than the norm. But at the end of the day, it's like, I think the thing that is hardest for me is my 80-year-old mom who lives not too far away from me. And it's, you know, I do go shopping. I do things like that. So when I go to her house, I'm extra paranoid because she already has lung issues. And it's just like I'm freaked out about that. So there's, as I'm sure we all have, something similar, right? Somebody in our lives that is immune compromised or something's going on, and you're extra careful, and it's the best you can do.
Yeah. My mom's 87 and she's alone. My sister lives nearby a couple blocks away, but nobody comes in the house. It's not safe, right? And
so
I really think about people. Of course, elders are often isolated anyway, but I really think about people who are alone right now and how difficult that must be. You and I were lucky enough to be with our families, and that's good. And I do Zoom calls with my kids because Abby's in Marin and Henry's, I don't know where Henry is. He was in San Francisco. I think now he's gone somewhere else. He's sheltering in place with his good buddy. I think he's in Monterey. Yeah, he's in Pacific Grove. But we do Zoom calls together. But it can be really hard for older people, I think, especially because they're so high risk that they just can't see anybody. Patrick, it sounds like you're maybe in a very small quarters with your family. Has that been all right?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, being in, I mean, gosh, it being in, you know, 300, 400, 500 square feet.
Yikes.
With two adults, two children, and a husky is always an exciting process.
You got a husky in there too?
Well, half husky, half shepherd.
Jeez Louise.
Around here somewhere.
Wow.
You know, we throw in an extra husky or a couple of cats to really make things exciting, but it's kind of been fun. I think fun's not the right word. It's been fun talking to friends of ours who are homeschooling or home with their kids. And, you know, I laugh because one of my friends was just like, how did you homeschool your children? I want to do, you know, and it's just like, breathe.
But you've been doing this all along,
for
right?
Years.
Even before
you've
been homeschooling.
And I was like, one, it's always hard. Two, you're starting homeschooling from scratch after disrupting everything your child is familiar with in education.
That's right.
You know, and also dealing with, you know, hey, how do you explain to your small child or your young child, like, what this means? You know, what is a pandemic? Why are we wearing masks? Why can't I go over to my friend's house? Why can't we play on the playground? Why is the movie theater closed? So this is incredibly challenging for everybody. And, you know, most people are doing pretty good at it.
Good.
You know.
Well, you guys, I tell you what, if you're with people you love, it's a lot easier. So that's why it's nice. If it's a family that really gets along, it can be okay. How about you, Robert? You doing all right?
Yeah, overall. I had some incredibly horrible illness late December of last year that lasted literally like a month and a half.
I wonder if you had it.
I would love to be tested. My own hospital has like, unless you're exhibiting symptoms, don't come anywhere near
right.
us. And so I'm
right.
like, but if I've had it and I'm over it, I would love to
get out
donate
there.
Blood plasma or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But
my son got back from Asia and, on the 28th of March, he was in Bali, Vietnam. He was traveling all over, he was living with a bunch of kids in Bali, finally convinced him to come home. About a week after he got home, he got sick. He had a headache. He was weak. He had muscle pains. He coughed. And we couldn't get him tested. He's much better now. He's fine now. He's 100% now. And I told him, you might be in luck. You're one of the first, you know, he just graduated from college last year. You might be one of the first people in your age cohort to be able to go out and work because you might have immunity. Steve Gibson also got weirdly very ill. Wasn't able to get tested. He's recovered. So people like you and Steve and my son, you could be the golden. You might have that yellow card you can carry around saying, "I'm COVID free. I got the immunity."
Now just doing whatever I can to keep friends and family calm and safe, and anything anybody needs, I can get it done.
Nice.
And all our local businesses are closed down except for, you know, essential services like many places. But
well, in a way, we're lucky because we're all of us are already a little bit introverted. We're used to staying at home. We're used to having Skype chats, and this isn't so
it's not
very
a dramatic change of it
lifestyle. Isn't, it isn't really, is it?
Yeah. One of my hardcore like extrovert friends was saying how horrible this was, and I said, dude, this is exactly how I feel when you invite me to a party where I don't know anyone.
Yes,
it's true.
Yes, exactly. I love you guys. It's so nice to see you. I am so glad you're all doing so well, and I thank you for being friends for more than 20 years now, since the Tech TV days. When I started Twit, I did, and I bring this up every time, offer both Patrick and Kevin partnership in the company, but they declined, which is a good thing because you'd still be working for a living right about now. Kevin obviously didn't need me, did much better without me, and I'm glad you're doing so well, and I'm glad the family's doing well. Patrick, I love you. I hope you find a home at some place.
Oh, we will.
Somehow at some
time.
We
will.
But
there's a lot of America to look at. Salem's about as close as we can get, unless the real estate prices come down in a huge way in Portland. I love Portland. We both love the mere fact that Powell's Books is in Portland enough to make me want to.
Oh yeah,
in Powell's Books, in the shelving system,
yeah,
running around there at night with a flashlight.
Pretty cool. Robert Herron, great to have you too. It's always a pleasure to see a former lab rat.
I have much to thank you for, and you've always treated me really well, even in the earliest days of me being at Tech TV and being the underling on call for help. I just ever since then and throughout the last 15 years, it's been fun to watch your career.
Yeah.
All of our careers and I'm glad I know you people, and I find it quite special.
Oh, grip hug.
I love you guys.
Grip hug. I love you guys. And it's been a really fun 15 years. I look forward to 15 more. No, I don't think so. I had a fantasy a couple of weeks ago that maybe on this episode I say, hey, it's been great. Thanks so much. I hope you all have a good life. I'll see you later. And just walk off. Turn off the lights. I'm done. Couldn't do it. I love this too much. Thank you, guys. Come back real soon, okay?
Good seeing all of you. Stay safe.
Stay safe. Stay
you
healthy.
You guys too.
We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific. That's 5:30 Eastern time, 21:30 UTC. You can watch us do it live. Twit.tv/live is the live stream, audio and video there. You can also get it on demand after the fact because we put it in every show we do here on the website at twit.tv, also on YouTube. And, you know, your Amazon Echo or your Google Home, any voice-activated device, you could probably just say, if you want to listen to the live stream, something like, hey, Echo, play Twit Live. And if you want to hear the latest episode of any of our shows, just say, hey, Echo, play This Week in Tech, and it'll play it. Download a copy. You know what the best thing to do? Subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get it the minute it's available. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to even listen to it, but you'll have it. If you get a little bored, you're out there walking the dog or, you know, sewing masks, a podcast is an excellent thing to listen to while you're sewing your masks. Thank you, guys. Thanks, everybody. I'm going to say it again for the 15th year in a row. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.